This is Jan Cox, talk number 58, recorded on February 17th, 1983.
I have been pleased to note that several of you brand new people have even had the occasion to write me some observations. Several of you mentioned it to me, more or less in words, that it had snuck up on you, that no matter what my disclaimers were when I first saw you, that you started out in all this, plus your expectation originally was some new form of occultism, or perhaps I was the supreme mystic, even though I was just acting casual, wearing tennis shoes and seeming all right. And that you noticed, almost before you knew it, that it had gone from those kind of dreams to becoming a very practical matter, but in a sense that is ultimately the reality behind your original dreams of some sort of mystical, astounding experience. But now some of you are beginning to see that these mystical experiences are not being locked up in a room with me, or even just sitting here on Thursday night, that you find yourself standing at a 7-Eleven store or at your job, and suddenly something strikes you, that there you are in the midst of what proves to be, in a sense, you feeling as though you had suddenly awoken on a foreign planet, or vice versa. That there you stand, and you suddenly see, and you're surrounded by, not letting yourself get tied to words such as machines, which I tell you not to call people machines other than us talking, but there you stand, and it's you, and it's all these other creatures. Nothing wrong. It's not a matter of you better or worse. That's not even the question anymore. But it does become, in a sense, extremely, I never did like this word to use with people in the beginning, practical, because that almost sounds, but if you notice what I was saying that some of you are already seeing, there's a certain cycle it goes through. And all of you should, if you have not been using the occasion over at Kwasawavi, to get over and read all the papers back when I was writing a lot to this original Atlanta group. And you can see a form of that cycle, a part of which you were not. But the way in which I was writing, the way in which I was, as you would be safe to assume, when I was having such papers as that read every meeting, and then I would talk based upon the paper, more or less. But the kinds of descriptions, the kinds of allegories, and writing about junkyards, and battles going on the plane of the soul of man. Well, I am going to introduce you to something a little more specific. Since many of you are getting close enough to smell some of this, I'm going ahead and give you a piece of a map. And as always, if you do not listen very carefully, you're going to miss this, because this is getting even further and further removed from your original dreamy realms of talking about gods and spirits and flying casseroles. There is a force, and I will just give you a name for it for the time being and just point to you where it comes out. This is getting very close as to why a dog turns around three times before it sits down. It's getting very close to, and I shouldn't call it an answer, I should make up a new word, but a response, an understanding to the ultimate question, what am I about to say next? There is a force involved. And several of you, even this week, after attempting what you were doing last week of trying to observe how there could be three forces at work, of being able to see quite readily once you turn your attention to it, of seeing that you attempt to do something or someone else attempts to do something, or there seems to be some flow of energy out in life, that things apparently are going to go this way, either internally in you or externally. And there is immediately resistance to it. At least any of you, no one shows any great signs of being tripped up by such obscure theoretical questions. But remember, there are things that you could observe that happen almost at a subatomic level. It is so fast. I'm going to just shortly hint to you why. How time and speed are the same thing on this level. There are things that you could observe if you were fast enough that do not meet resistance, but you're not normally conscious of them. because they disappear. And that is what I have meant several times. I've said if anything is going to live, it will have resistance. But you can find it in yourself, just these internal ramblings of this thing, which just suddenly come up. You're standing somewhere, or a truck goes by, or you pick up a matchbook and it says, learn drafting at home and become a millionaire. And it just flashes in your mind some quick dream that you had back when you were 12 years old. It says, be a cartoonist. You say, I always want to be a cartoonist. I ought to take this. And all you do is light your cigarette and you throw it away. It is that sort of thing. It does not live. It is not really a part of you. And it happens at such a speed, and it happens also in a peculiar way in space, that it has nowhere to go in you. So back to what some of you were trying to observe and made some very proper observations. Several people were asking me rhetorically or observing that you begin to sense or suspect that the three forces might not exist separately in a way that would be definable. And that's quite proper for you to observe that. And if you can look back now, I've already told you that. Now, there is a connection between what I'm fixing to tell you and the three forces. But the three forces, the way in which you can observe them, I would prefer to live under the name that I have used once of them being undifferentiated. That they exist in such a way that the three that I tried to point out to you by the several examples last week, that by you believing, quite proper to start with, that I can see first force in action here and I can see second force. There's just no doubt about it. I see me wanting to do something and I see somebody giving resistance, the person that will be involved. But it can be reversed. It is absolutely instantaneously reversed if you were the other person. But the three do not exist separately. There is no such thing as one force existing by itself. As I said, the closest it would be, if you wanted to give a quick glimpse to such a question, would be what I've already described of looking at the matchbox. Of, yeah, I always wanted to be a cartoonist. And that's the end of it. But everywhere else, the three forces exist as one. Or else nothing is happening. So what you thought you were observing is nothing. But let me call this the primal force. And I refer to differentiate this between that and the undifferentiated three forces. This primal force is of only concern right now, and it exhibits itself in man. And several of you should have, you're close enough that if you can hear any of this, that you may have another minor blowout this week. There has always been the idea of unrecognized, secret, invisible, motivating forces in humanity. Times past, it was demons. Nowadays, it is the idea of a motivating unconsciousness in humanity. And I encourage you to listen very quickly. If this had been some years back, I would not even have used such terms. I would have made up new ones. Based upon the fact that everyone has read, everyone has thought, it is now part of your own circuitry, that the unconscious exists. I can sit here and tell you, forget that, it has nothing to do with the work, it is an illusion, it is a piece of something. And I can make everyone raise your hand if you're going to stay here and you've got to swear to me that you're going to forget about that. And you would all duly swear you would. And then the circuitry, it would not. All of you grew up in the age. There was no longer demons. That it is simply an accepted fact here in your circuitry. There is no way for you to swear I will not think about that. Because if you tell me, even without me understanding, if you tell me that there is no basis for this, it has nothing to do with the word, by God, I'll forget it. And you can. It is a part of the absolute almost culture of this whole planet now. Almost. It has never been recognized from the demons to the unconsciousness of man, since it's not necessary out in life or available. But now, once I point it out, you should see this right quick. It has always been an unrecognized admission that man does not know why he does what he does. That's all it is. It is not, of course, understood in any sense that brings about change. And what I am going to point to you about, that I am going to call the primal flow, is the reality behind why a man does not understand why he does what he does, and why he cannot answer why a dog turns around 3 times before he sits down. There is a flow that results in, I'll make up some new temporary places, some names, quite common names, words. But remember, we're talking about Birmingham, and it's not necessary. Birmingham does not even exist. The primal flow results or manifests itself in what we will temporarily refer to as one's nature. Now, this differs. I am referring, if it's not clear enough yet, to the force that makes you do what you do. But the difference that you must listen very quickly and carefully between what I'm referring to, that you have got to see in you, and what ordinary humanity, what you and your own circuitry now believes is some unconsciousness in me, that there are dark forces, forces with which I am not fully conscious, somewhere I picked up in my background, make me do this. And as far as such is possible, it's just the opposite. That is what humanity describes as the unconscious. But this primal force is not picked up by life. You are born being a conduit for it. You're an opening for it. And it results in a certain kind of nature. It is not acquired, and as opposed to this nature, let us use a quite common term, of a self. Now, the self is what is picked up in life, apparently. The primal force operates in such a way as, let me give you an example, that there are people who are born, as best you can remember, this is just words, even though you've got all week and all day on Thursday to be around everyone else. Remember, we're sitting here, and even though I'm using words, when you're at your best, and those of you who begin to get little glimpses, you understand what I mean at those good times when I say that the maps are disposable. So don't choke on these words. They're not exact because they're not the reality of it, and they're static. And as soon as you hear them, unless you fight with every ounce of effort, you believe, oh. And as soon as you do that, you become your own guru. Oh, I understand that. Next. There are people who are born an intrinsic coward. It is part of the primal flow. They do not acquire it. As I said, it is almost, as far as it goes, the exact opposite of humanity's conception of itself, especially vis-a-vis psychology and the idea of an unconscious. There are people who have a cowardly nature. It is not what they have picked up in life. It is not that their father beat them. It is not that their mother, 2 or 3 hours or 2 or 3 times a night, up until the age of 15, would wake up and scream and run about the house and holler, you know, spooks are after me, and come in and look under your bed. And it's not that that did not happen to you. But an ordinary person cannot see the justice of it, that there you are with that family, and it did happen. But that is not what made you a coward. You are a coward by nature. That part of the primal flow that went through you, and of course this is just one aspect, there'd be many other things. But it's cowardice, fear. Now there is no direct and simple way. Well, an ordinary person is out of the question. But even beyond that, there is no simple, direct way to undo that part of your nature. Someone who is intrinsically a coward by nature will always be subject to fits of fear. Always. But what the work is about, as far as it being on a personal level, and that's getting down to more and more of the nuts and bolts of it to get some of you people beyond all of this, is when you begin to activate this higher circuitry, you can override all of that. There have been just quite ordinary people, I'm aware, in literature and instant proverbs here and there that have tried to point out that such things, I'm not exactly quoting any particular writer, but there have been several along the lines of everyone has some fear, only a fool does not have any fear. Someone has tried to define a brave man as a man who has fear and overcomes it. And all of that verbally is a fair reflection of the reality of it. Because what is a part of your nature? What is a part of the primal flow that was going through you that is the purpose that you were here as long as you're asleep, as long as you're only conscious on the ordinary level? There is no way to go back and undo that. And if you've already lost track, remember that we're talking about something that's almost the opposite from ordinary conception of psychological traumas and problems. And it does not mean that in some way your parents or someone didn't frighten you or something terrible, you almost fell off the top of the Washington Monument when you were 5 years old. But all that's irrelevant. Because for every person that almost tripped and fell off the edge of a cliff when they were a child, that now says, I am terribly frightened and I've been undergoing analysis now for 12 years, and I know it was based upon that. For everyone that happened to, I could bring you X number of other people that same sort of thing happened to, and they're not a coward. It is not that that caused it. Everything is connected. And the kind of nature that you had, the kind of primal forces going through you was tied to your parents. It was magnetically tied to the circumstance of where you were born, the kind of people that your parents were associating with, the kind of people your parents associated with, who they associated with, and everything. When that is part of one's nature, you are always subject to it. But the awakening, being activated, being able to activate the circuitry above that, acts like an override to what you would now think of, to continue to use that one example of, I have fear. Sometimes I can identify it. Sometimes I just see somebody walking toward me on the street and I become fearful. Other times I can sit at the house in the middle of the night and think I hear a sound. Other times I can sit in the house and not hear anything, and that makes me fearful. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be no rhyme or reason to it. When you're able to activate some of the circuitry above the ordinary line of consciousness, you can override what would normally be this aspect I'm referring to as one's nature, and in the true sense, overcome it. And it is not, as all of you should know by now, in any sense connected with your past dreams of the gods are helping me. It is a physical, literal fact of being able to be conscious. And I'm still telling you, it's physical and literal. Some of you are beginning to even get little glimpses of this. You knew people. That let us say that you do have this streak of great fear that just comes out and you consider to be a huge problem. Something you should work with, or you should talk it out, or you should go back and find out what sort of untoward circumstances happened in your childhood that produced this. It did not. But you can be conscious above it, and it's absolutely irrelevant. And at best, when it's really good, it's fun. Because there it is, and you just suddenly find yourself staying in a strange seat. You just stepped off the bus or the plane, and suddenly, it's that old feeling of fear. Like, here's all these group of Shriners over here, or these people dressed up as sailors, and there's no logic to it, but I just know that they're all about to turn their head and look at me, and it's just one step from there to they're all going to say, let's get him. And there it is. And it's absolutely irrelevant. And when I say it best, it's pleasurable, as you turn around and plow into them. It is really pleasurable, and you should wallow in it the more you can do it, because once you do it, when you continue to make the struggle, it's almost gone. It's worth it. Many people I've found out through the years here, that good doses of such as that is going against one's nature. Some people, it's like a dose of good dope for a year, and they just wallow in it. It is the reality behind real bravery that is not available to an ordinary person. They can talk about it, but it is being able to do that. And try and remember what I keep pointing out to you, that there is an absolute difference. It is almost the other side of the coin that we are not talking about. I am not directing you to any aspect that's ordinarily considered by man. It is not I'm overcoming something that has been impressed upon me by life, that I am unraveling something that my parents or my childhood did to me. It is not that, because you cannot unravel it. Again, I can point out for your own consideration, not to attack humanity, but if anyone out in life was attempting to awaken and become involved with reading occult books, got involved with psychology, got involved with analysis, it would strike them somewhere. And now you should be able to look at it from a slightly different angle, that analysis cannot work, religion cannot work, because they're working on the wrong thing. It's holding everything together, making it move, on the basis of, I have this great fear, there's no explaining it, I have been a coward all my life, it's ruined my sex life, it's ruined how much I will try to do in life, it has ruined the kind of occupations I pursued, I can't go on vacations. Well, sir, lay down, it's $55 an hour, and I'm sure that this could quite possibly, maybe someday, lead to something that could be, from some viewpoint, lay down and pay your money. They're not talking about the reality of it. They're not talking about someone's nature, that they are a conduit for what you would call fear, in this example I'm making up. That you are a hole in the fabric of life, in this part of the great machine, this living machine, you're in a place. It's like certain fluids, certain flows of energy, electrically, chemically, is coming through the machine. And to use the kind of words that humanity uses, there are many places that need to be fear. Just everywhere. And you happen to be one of them. You are that hole. It flows through. The justice of it is that then the place in which you grew up, the environment, all that up here you can seem to remember in this self, is all tied to it. But notice, other than some fairly obscure would-be religious groups, which has never meant anything, it was just a reflection of something. I'm just saying that so that you won't think that some of those strange Methodists or who they were, some of the people actually understood any of this, that none of humanity ever becomes involved with anything resembling what I'm describing to you. That I was born with a certain nature. And if there was truly a place that I could put my finger verbally and say, all right, there is a problem. There is something to me that up here seems to bother me so much, this great fear. And I will in some way figure out where I picked this up, where I acquired this unnatural, this unprofitable, this disturbing fear. They never look at the real place. Well, they can, of course, but they do not. It is not back here on the line. It's back where the line started. The flow, and that's resulting what we're just temporarily calling one's nature, remember, is not acquired. And the idea that everything that seems to be oneself has been acquired would have to be understood aright of how it was connected with what one's nature was. But I'm now pointing to you in a more specific direction to consider it quite simply for the time being, the way in which I'm describing it. That there is this primal flow that everyone is subject to. It is ingratiated into your total physical body. It is the basis of why no one can say, can answer, what am I about to say next? But notice how things are arranged. Contemporary humanity, including the most educated and sophisticated of people, without any doubt, it has now become real. For me to say there is no such thing as the unconsciousness, there is no unconscious factor in man, that's wrong. There is now. But in a sense, he made it up. Of course, remember, that's not true. But in a sense, he made it up, and it's not true, but now it's true. Because almost everyone, especially sitting here in the Western world, believes, I mean, it's beyond any debate. You couldn't discuss it with anybody, except in some great theoretical, vague theoretical way. People simply stand around at parties, at work, on street corners, strangers. Two people stand at a traffic light, and a guy will almost step out, and another guy pulls him back. They almost got hit. He says, phew, I appreciate that. I must have some unconscious desire to get killed. I always do that. And the guy goes, yeah. It is real. But what they're admitting without knowing it is, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And another guy goes, yeah, I know what you mean. There is a kind of necessary connectedness, and there is a kind of necessary battle. It's going to be part of what I want you to do as a task this week. And let me see if I can come up with a fairly, this will get a lot of you. It'll get everybody a little bit. This flow operates in such a way. And I remind you again, it is what you and your ordinary circuitry, no matter what I say to you, that right now you consider that there are unconscious forces, that is, there are forces that are unrecognized, there are things that have happened to me in life. They have all made this indelible imprint on me. And it's concocted this thing that seems to be my personality, concocted this thing that is obviously the enemy that we have got to overcome. And it's not that that's not true. But we're leaving the playground faster and faster. That is not the problem. You have got to see what the question is. It's, why do I do what I do? And the answer does not lie on the horizontal line. The answer lies right back there where it starts. Now, the way that one's nature manifests itself isn't what appears to be the self. But back to my fairly nasty example. Let's say, well, I usually am nicer about this, and I usually say almost all of you, or some of you, so we'll leave it at that. Because if I say some of you, then some of you that don't like it when you hear it, then you can imagine, well, he just said some, so he doesn't even know that all of us suffer from this. So, you know, even he's already picked out the ones he thought when he was sitting there making up the example, then maybe he doesn't know it's me. Many, many people have sexual daydreams, and they're in the self, not in one's nature, in the self. Boy, I'd love to do that. Been thinking about it for years. And if circumstances were such that you were suddenly thrown into a situation, you thought, well, I've got to seek analysis. I've got to seek psychiatric help. And you in some way could finally mumble out part of it to the psychiatrist. Oh, no. The whole attitude would be, well, this is something. There's some strange dream I picked up, and we've got to work it out. But listen fast. Because I'm going to end this partly with a question. Many, many people have strange, what they consider to be strange, but serious sexual daydreams. Boy, if I could do this. Sometimes they daydream it when they're actually engaged in sex with somebody. Maybe for years and years. And they're just sure. And they hear about a place, this is done. People here do that. They'll go up and knock on the door and say a secret word, and they'll let you in. And people actually do it. Maybe the man or woman drives by there. Every new city they go to, they keep track of, do they do things like that? There's a place, and they'll drive past it. The man's surrounded by gas next, you know, close to it. Just like maybe some way I'll be drug into it, or I can't get it fixed, and they'll come out and holler, you need help, and they'll take me inside, and I'll go, wow, I've never seen such all kinds of dreams that someday I will do that. And they never do. The fuel is lacking. The self has dreams, and the nature won't fuel it. And also notice that you're left with a continuing beautiful situation of additional frustration. I have not recently, well, I have never done it as strong as I could have with anybody here. And so I may go ahead and threaten, because some of you would be almost the end of yourself based upon what you've already done. If I just took you inside and say, have you ever dreamed of doing so-and-so sexually? And I'd have you. And even if you couldn't bear the answer and you just began to sweat blood. And I'd say, all right, go do it under circumstances you won't get yourself arrested. You go do it or don't come back. Some of you, that would almost be the end of yourself. But my rhetorical question was, consider, not just limited to sex, but But that gets many, many people. Why, this thing that seems to be oneself has certain dreams that you consider and plans, but let's just call them dreams. Things that you think about, you daydream about, but they seem serious. Now, when I say serious to the point that in yourself, the self part, there's no question to you, if I did that, it would be pleasurable. It's what I want to do, but there are all the reasons I can't. There's all these second forces. I was brought up to believe I couldn't do that, or I shouldn't do that, or what would people think? What would my mother think if she knew I did that? But what I'm telling you, that is not an acquired problem. The problem is that one's nature will not fuel, will not furnish the motivation to pursue the self's dreams. And the question should be, Now, at least I made that too strong for some of yourselves, catching you flat-footed. It is not just limited to sex. Think about the other dreams, things that I just knew if I would pursue this, if circumstances were such that I could do this, there is no doubt in my mind that I would find this enjoyable. It would be beneficial. It would be a great boon to my life. I'd be glad I did it. The question should be, why have I never done it? And I'm telling you, the reasons are not somewhere back here on the horizon line. The question you should be trying to consider from this is why these certain dreams I can find that I have constantly, have always had, and disregarding the one's mind can always come up, well, I can't do it right now, that there has been, apparently, along the horizon line, almost as far back as you can remember, dreams I'll do so-and-so, and appeared, as far as you can tell, to you to be quite serious. They seem to be serious in your intention that I want to do it, something in me wants to. I can dream about it, and I find some small pleasure in dreaming about it. So there's no doubt if I did it, it would be just highly pleasurable. I would be glad I did it. Why have I never done it? I've been right up close to the place. I've driven by the place where they say they do it in here. And they would even let you in. And I have never been able to stop. Now the story is to oneself, that oneself tells oneself, is just the very mundane and obvious things I've already been through. You don't have to look any further than your own head. Well, I better not do that. I'd be ashamed to. I can't. What if somebody found out? You've got to bypass all that. You've got to be able to go beyond that and now ask yourself the question, how can I have such strong, apparent, serious dreams, and there is not one iota of motivation, well, no more than making me drive past a place, and I look and yeah, that's just the way they described it. It's got a green door, and there's a house number. Wow. And there's no motivation to take your foot off the gas and put it on the brake. And you drive on past, and you continue to dream about it. Let me try and remind you one more time. If you only listen in a very superfluous manner, if you let all this get caught up in the circuitry. Notice, this could sound like the ordinary thing that I started out telling you that it was not. It almost sounds as though we're talking about ordinary psychology, that man has some sort of conscious mind that tries to do things, and he has all these unconscious pieces of baggage that he's picked up that interferes with it. And it's the opposite, the way in which they normally describe it. They have been attacking the very thing that, in a sense, does not exist. It would be the epitome of Don Quixote. Well, I should expand it a little bit. They're attempting to attack the wind instead of the windmill. They're attempting to find a source of here are my problems. If there was such a thing as real problems, they would be fueled. Once you begin to taste of it, whatever might be classified as a real problem, there's no doubt about it. It seems as though I have just stuck my index finger too far into that skill saw, and I seem to be bleeding in a very unseemly fashion. I believe that I am confronted with a real problem. There is motivation behind it. A person will do something. But again, try and consider beyond my sexual example of what goes on in here. The time that you've had to attempt to try and observe the kinds of tasks I put you through, attempting to look at it certain ways to try and catch it. And what is going on up here is not a Bugs Bunny cartoon. It is not a Marx Brothers movie. It is not continual laughter. It is a continual apparent battle going on. It is at least, but now you should be able to see it. It is the two forces. I don't have to look any further than two forces. Here's all these dreams I have, and I can't seem to get going. Or I even believe that I know how to get going, and I don't know. And then it's off to something else, and then it's back to it. But it is not an internal struggle that each person has in some way individually picked up. It is not that everyone is paying off the sins of their fathers. It is not that everyone had a terrible childhood. Of course, everybody did have a terrible childhood, if we're going to call it that, because everyone had a childhood. Then all the people responsible for your childhood had a childhood ad infinitum. There is that which is the necessary fueling, and it appears to, on the individual level, to make people move, to make somebody do something. But compared to how much you do, what percentage of that is that compared to how much you dream? And I don't mean just in quantity. How many things do you dream about of what I should be doing with my life? Talking about on the ordinary level now. And all the little perverse dreams, sexual or otherwise, of things I want to do. Things I want to do, and I dream, I can see within myself a large amount of this energy is spent dreaming about these certain things. Where is the motivation for it? How do I have these dreams and I do not make any effort to pursue them? Well, everyone is aware that there is a common term, a common idea in humanity, that in some way people would be better off if they could tell the truth. And there's schools of psychology based upon it, and there are offshoots of religion has been based upon it. And it's, I guess, fairly common even amongst humanity in general now, that if in some way I could be spontaneous, or if I could tell the truth, if I could just say what's on my mind, if I could, you know, cease from playing social games with people. And if I walked into a party here, my wife said, "How do you like my new hat?" I wouldn't say, "That looks fine, dear." I'd say, "That looks like..." You know, in some way, humanity would be better off. As always, there's a reflection of something. But also, all of you should know by now that the idea of simply saying what's on your mind, as people would say, to use my example of, "How do you like my new dress? That looks horrible." That has nothing to do with awakening, per se. But consider, along the lines I'm describing to you now, that there are absolutely... Well, first, there is absolutely that which humanity is not conscious of, that there is a flow. There is a primal flow that results in a kind of intrinsic nature that is not to be done away with. It is not to be undone. It is not to be erased. And when I say it's not to, I don't mean that you shouldn't. I'm saying you can't. It is there. That is the reason you are here. That is what your form of sleep is. It is not necessarily, I repeat, to be limited to just saying a person is a coward. But there is a kind of focal point, that there is a kind of central flow that is identifiable in almost everyone. In years past, it was harder to see in women, but now women have everything being just, and now there are women in the work, and it's also now that you're getting about as easy to see as men are. That is, of a certain primal flow. In times past, women were not as limited to just being a coward. They could be a coward and be four or five other things, some of them almost contradictory to being a coward. But now, welcome to the club. But there is a central, it's almost a focal point, and it's not all that hard. Ordinary people do it to each other many times. Some of you could already do it to yourself. You could say, "Well, I feel like my greatest problem is I am a coward." Then you might be right. But it's not, of course, correct on the basis of "that's my greatest problem. Well, here, sit down, let's talk about it." That indeed is part of your nature. That's part of your nature. And until you begin to see it, it's of no more consequence than you saying, I'm sure I could be more awake if I had only been 6 feet tall. There's no difference. It just appears to be, and it is accepted because of the way things are arranged in humanity, that this self is the cause of it all. That the self is the seat of my problems. The idea that I was going to try and get you to consider that in some way it would be beneficial if I could tell the truth, if I could just be absolutely truthful. If that were correct, if there were any benefit, what part of the truth are we looking for? Who's going to speak? This or that? Well, that didn't get enough. If you were going to try to tell the truth, and I'm not simply now referring to that you're going to try and tell the truth to me or to your wife or husband, to yourself. Well, I have these strange sexual daydreams. I always imagine I want to do so-and-so so much that I'm just sure it'd be fun because I enjoy thinking about it. Other than the fact that I suffer simultaneously because I don't want anybody to know it. All right, to tell the truth would be, since I'm trying to get you to consider it, all right, I should just face up that I have these strange, perverted sexual daydreams. Do you? Where? There? Or there? All right. What have you done? Have you actually done it? Or have you dreamed about it? I've dreamed about it, but I'm just waiting the chance. How long have you been dreaming about it? 25 years. And I would have done it, except... That, I repeat, under all ordinary conditions, is not to be trifled with. It is not to be stopped. A person through which the primal flow is could be partially labeled cowardice is always going to be subject to those kinds of fits of fear that are flowing through there. They become irrelevant. Or as I said at best, they become fun. Because you absolutely... I continue periodically to make jokes about Superman doesn't cry and Superman doesn't whine. Someday you'll know. You'll enjoy my use of that term. Because it's not Superman in the sense, as you should know by now, of beating people up and having power over people. But it's to step off, and there are a group of nuns, and you're just sure they're all going to suddenly start quacking and attack you with umbrellas. This kind of fear you've always had that has stopped you, that has seemed to have just immobilized you at times, that is as real as anything in you. And it can be right there. Not your imagination. It's not something an analyst could ever help you with, because it is there. But the fun of it is, so what? And any more descriptions I give you are just, they get worse and worse. You've got to find it. That's what some of the tasks that I've given of having you go out and do things, some of you got a little taste of. But that's nothing until you can do it on your own. That I am fearful, I've always been fearful, I can get so fearful that I will go 2 or 3 miles on my way. Rather, I can just glance up there and see somebody walking down the street, and I can't analyze it. I don't know whether it's because they look fat. And maybe I had a fat uncle that used to scare me or beat me up. If you could block that out, you could find that you are fearful, and there is no accountable reason, because that is a part of your nature. And you look up there, and you have all these dreams of what will happen, and you'll go 2 or 3 miles out of the way. Or if you feel like you're trapped, you might think, well, I'll faint. Maybe I'll think I'm dying of a heart attack, and they won't beat me up, or whatever it is they're going to do to me. The real fun is not just in the task and what you have gotten out of that when you tried them correctly. I mean, having you do things you would have never done. But if that's happened to you, and you can rise above all of it, that the fear is there, in a sense. But after that, there is no fear. And I don't know what to tell you is comparable to that in fun. I can always try and use sex as some example. But you have to try and pursue what I'm describing tonight. You have got to try and see for yourself that internally there are two flows. One you have never recognized that has always gone by such terms as the unconscious. that there are forces flowing in me that life has inflicted on me, little personality quirks, unprofitable traits I have picked up. And that's all irrelevant. Rather than I am a coward through something that's happened to me, is to find out that there is a kind of fear that is beyond this. It is not something that's been acquired. And to twist it slightly is then to consider that I am filled with these continuing dreams. I can identify two or three of them or a handful of them. I have always dreamed I will become a cartoonist. I will run away and join a circus. I will go and find a place where they do things like this. And I never do them. But I continue to dream over them, and simultaneously with that apparently first force of I want to do that, I suffer over having never done it. This does not operate from the kind of motivation that is part of one's nature. They are as tied together as the first and second force. And all my dotted lines and drawing them up here and down there, there is no such separation. You have to force it. You have to see that there is a part of me over which there is no explanation. You have to see that there are continuing dreams, apparently of a very serious nature, that have no fuel. They do not move me to any action. I'll also point out why it has always been so popular, one of the reasons, for gossip. And not just gossip between people, but gossip on the basis of biographies, People magazine. Has anyone already jumped ahead? It operates somewhat on this basis. Of course, no one can ever analyze it. Those who could analyze it wouldn't be subject to it. Which, of course, there's nobody outside of here. It is sort of like a hope, pretend. I'll make that a hyphenated word. To hear about other people, to have an interview with somebody who just did something worthy of external note. Swam the fastest mile, flew the lightest plane, climbed the highest mountain, brought in a distressed airplane, decided to do some great research that took them 20 years, now they've written a book. And for the people to describe, and they say, well, what motivated you to do this? And the man or woman draws himself up and says, well, they begin to say, as a child, I was very weakly. As a child, I was deprived of this and that. Such and such happened in my life. My first wife left me, and I wondered what goes on to make people do this and that. And the whole pretend is to find that there's some conscious motivation, at least in somebody else. Nobody's aware that that's the reason, but that's it. That is right at the heart of it. To read the autobiography of Teddy Roosevelt or somebody, whatever it is in yourself, and maybe even more, but at least in yourself, that seems to be attractive. Well, here's a brand new biography on Teddy Roosevelt or Winston Churchill or Madame Curie. Because once it's laid out, and if they were here to be interviewed, nowadays they'd play along with it, but at least in the cold, dead world of the printed word, the biographer can come up with all sorts of things, but it's always on the basis that here is somebody that by God knew what they were doing. They planned out their life, they got reasons for what they did, and those that are contemporaneous with us, you can interview them, well, just on the spot. And you don't have to just look at People magazine or television, look at yourself. But there it is. Man walks out and finds out he's just been nominated for an Academy Award, and he wrote and directed this film. And he comes out of his office, and they've just announced the nominations, and a reporter stands up and says, it was so surprising for a movie of this type to be nominated. Whatever made you decide to write and produce such a thing? And apparently, we'd be back now, of course, if it was us, and you were able to ask the right question, of what am I going to say next? And you could delude yourself and say, well, he should be, you know, expecting this. He knew it would happen. That's got nothing to do with it. He walks out and they say, whatever made you decide such an extremely unusual picture for this day and time, and now you're nominated for an Academy Award, hardly anybody else would take a chance on this, and you did it. What caused you to do it? They get through talking, so what caused you to do it? And he goes, and a mouth opens. facial expressions, gestures. Why did you decide to invade Poland? Well, I'll tell you. It is the feeling that some of you are getting that there is a great masquerade, or there is another planet. You've always lived here, and you knew something was wrong. It's all operating just according to plan. You know what's going to happen. There he is, the writer and producer of this movie, and he's just been nominated, and he doesn't even know it yet. And the reporter says, you know you've been nominated? No, I didn't. Well, you have, and what made you decide to undertake such an extremely risky project in this day and time? But it all works out. They don't hand it, the mic to the man and him say, Snodgrass, not that, you know. Or the man does not say, get the hell away from me. He does not. It's as though there's some, and you, no one ever analyzes it. The expected always happens. Or the president, and somebody takes a shot at him. And the newspaper are trying to find something going on. So they wander around the hospital, and he's in the operating room, let us say. And the press wanders outside to people on the street. And says, you heard the president just got shot. What do you think? And people say, it's horrible. What's this world coming to? And I may not agree with his policies. And they'll stop as long as you watch the news. And they got nothing else to do. They keep stopping people. But they know something in his mind and say, what do you think? And they say, good, the rat bastard deserved it. Are you listening? I'm not trying to be funny. I know when I am, of course. That is not the point. And somewhere in your circuitry, you could say, well, now, wait, there are people, many people, that would say, hell, I'm glad they shot the bastard. They might be crazy or half drunk or just sore heads. There are people like that. But consider the justice of it. The press don't find them. It's not on TV. The streets are just walking by in the hospital. The network people are trying to fill in some news, and they're waiting to hear what's going on with the president. And just people going by, and they decide to stop. What do you think of the president being shot? In some way, they don't ever get anybody. And they don't stand there and plan it. They don't have somebody saying, watch out for anybody that looks like it might be a sorehead and say something unkind about the president. You hear it all. There is a flow at work, and they ask, what do you think? And you don't have to watch. You know what they're going to say. It's horrible. Next person. Terrible. I can't believe the world is just becoming a madhouse. Thank you, sir. And you, madam, what do you think? I don't have words to express how terrible I feel about that poor man. It is a play that you have seen over and over. It appears to be new every day. They shoot one person a day. They shoot somebody else tomorrow. But it's all in here. This whole thing is being played out over and over. Somebody says, what do you think? Another voice says the same thing it's always said. It's as expected. You know exactly what it's going to say. That's how you know you're you. That's how some of you fear. Well, you are pushing me up to a slippery edge that's been buttered. Because sometimes I'm not sure what's going on. And I was using the idea of people believe that in some way it would be beneficial to tell the truth in case I did not get you clear enough, everyone to the point. Assuming that there would be some benefit, not ultimately with a period, but as a part of a struggle, if I could just tell the truth, regardless of what you're thinking somebody else, if I could tell the truth to myself, if I could just go ahead and say, look, you, for years you've been telling me you had these sexual daydreams wanting to do so-and-so, and you have read, you have listened, you've heard out, they're doing it down there, and they'll let you in the house. And you got the microphone. You've been doing that? I don't know. Why don't you go and do it? And you get to him, the other self. And he says, well, wait a minute. I'll tell you why not. But you know what he's going to say. It's the same thing. What do you think about the president being shot? It's terrible. You know why he's going to say? Because you have heard it over and over. It is all expected. It is all planned. It is all part of a script. It all fits. There are no surprises. Nothing unusual going on. And you go back to suffering. If you could tell the truth to you, and you said, you've always had these dreams, and yet you have never done anything, and you've had every opportunity in the world, there's nothing stopping you, why don't you do it? It's truth time. Here we go, your turn. Who are you going to hand the mic to? There or there? Who is it you believe that you're listening to? Who is it you believe you're talking to? And to say the very least, what I'm trying to hint to get you to consider on your own, that everyone talks, they believe they're talking to the wrong place. There is a flow going through everyone that is not a matter of simply stopping or rearranging. It is, I chose that word, even though it's quite common, for our temporary mouth, quite specifically, the way in which it's ordinarily used, that people have some sort of nature. But then it becomes absolutely entwined with this. It's everyone on this planet, under their proper conditions, which is worldwide now, excuses everyone else under proper conditions for their behavior, for what they said, for what they said they thought before, on the basis of, well, we all have problems due to our past. And you should not be that concerned, my dear man, about being a coward. We all have a certain amount of fear. We're all afraid of certain things. It's just, I'll bet that if you had the time to really analyze it or talk to a good psychologist, that, you know, probably you could unmask the root of this fear and do away with it. And you can't. And the ordinary man is not going to do anything. But I am telling you that the awakening process is not to change your nature. It's to transcend it. That if that is what was flowing through, the flow will continue. It's whether you're now living still down there, almost in a sewer, and it's your feet's down in there, and the fear comes. That if that is what was flowing through, the flow will continue. It's whether you're now living still down there, almost in a sewer, and it's your feet's down in there, and the fear comes through, and it gives you a chill. Or whether you're conscious somewhere else, and it goes on, but you understand my use of the term Superman. That it is absolutely fun. We had some very good questions and observations. Is it possible that the three forces are not separate but the same force whose components are continually intermingled, and that it simply appears that they are separate because of the limits of ordinary perception? My participation, this is from a new person, here began as relief from problems and suffering and occult hobbies. They seemed to be followed by a kind of joy, a surprise party in my head. And now the experience, which is opening up, is astounding. And your descriptions are pointing far more literally than any of us ever imagined. Good. Because you will find out the trick. I mean that they're as crude and everyday as some of this sounds. When people talk, the balancing back and forth from one forth from negative to positive appears to keep things going. If something does come out to an end, someone else will usually try to start it up at the end of that. I had to piece some of that together. I assume you all followed it. That is a very proper observation. It is also connected to what I've tried to point out, that there is never any finality to life except death. But not just on the physical level, but nowadays seems to be of supreme importance to people in our situation is no longer the physical confrontation with life or death every day of having to get up and go out and literally go out and find something to eat and a place to live every day, that you have got to get up early in the morning before the animals attack you, before the people attack you, and take your wife and your children, and move out of the tree or the hut, or the cave, wherever you were, and you have got to physically move out. And literally, having no idea whether you'll find enough food to feed your family that day, that you may be dead before the day's over, or you may wander off in search of food, and the weather turned inclement to the point that you can't even find a place to stay. You can't come back where you were. It's continual rambling on and on. There is no finality. But beyond that level now, that is not everyone's problem here. There is no finality up here. And that which in the past would have been a situation of do or die or eat or be eaten is now, instead of it being on the physical level, on the lower circuitry, it's now manifested itself, we could say, psychologically. In some of the ways, if you care to consider this, of that kind of eat or be eaten, now manifests itself psychologically in nationalism, all forms of tribalism. It's now eat or be eaten, but it's not just on the physical level. Notwithstanding nations sword rattling at one another, that to eat or be eaten, instead of you doing it now on the physical level, people do it psychologically instead of biologically, and it comes out in this kind of humane or mortal hostility that I pointed out to you. And it specifically comes out in racism, nationalism, religious isms, but just all the feelings that it's us against, you know, it's us good people against the bad people. It's just a variation of, it's all of us tigers against all the wolves. It's all of us zebras have got to run from the lions. It's all of us Baptists got to run from the damn Catholics. There's no difference. But back to what that person was trying to point out, there's never any finality. And in conversation, you can see it. If anything is going on, it can be a no-living situation. Like I'm looking at the Matchbox, yeah, I always want to be a cartoonist. Somebody can say something, and you literally, in a sense, not take the energy. It's just babble going on. But if there is any energy being passed, as the conversation keeps going, there's never a finality to it. At the very least, it ends up that somebody will be rah, 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 and they seem to come to the end of what they're saying. It's your turn. Or the other person, you listen to it. And at the very least, it will be, yes, I couldn't agree with you more, but... And they pick it up. But there is no period to it. There is no finality to it. Which is the nature of life. But what they don't conceive of, what they cannot see is that that is true, that there is no end to it. And they take it as being an end. We've settled this. The difference between that and being able to see is that there is no end to it. Last Friday, my daughter asked for another story after bedtime. I said no, and she persisted. And as I started giving her reasons why, it was like a sharp little brick landed on the top of my brain. I remembered the three forces right away, or they remembered themselves, and it seemed as though the second force piled on resistance. Something was being stacked on me, and I quit giving my daughter reasons. I had several questions. How can one shield from energies emanating from another person when there is a sensitivity within? It is not how one can work with not transmitting them. But this sensitivity awareness can be like a sponge. Another one, in considering the dance of the three forces, the equation I plus not I equals everything kept reappearing. Is there any connection? And another one, would you say that the creative force is what you remember, and is a sustaining force what you're not aware of? All right. Those are the kind of questions I always say that I'm not going to respond to, because sometimes I've tried to describe them as being too theoretical. And I don't really like that term, but I don't have time to, or the energy to try to make up a better one. It's not that they're too theoretical in some negative way. They are so good, and I mean something by theoretical, that you're on the verge of beginning to smell something, the people who can ask such as that, specifically, on your own, that I'm not going to respond to them. But you should continue asking such questions. And anytime you feel the urge, send them to me. I don't look at them and go, woo, and throw them away. And you are quite proper to continue asking them to yourself. You should always do it. Just because I say I'm not going to respond, or there are certain kinds of questions I'm not going to answer in the way in which they're asked, that are rather philosophical or theoretical, and what I'm really pointing to is they're a little bit beyond what you can see, and if I start talking to you now, it would mess up a chance for you to jump somewhere. But this is what you should be doing. There is no such thing as a too theoretical question. As long as now I've got my hands on most of you, as long as I know that you're not going out and take that as being, well, I'll go back now to, you know, trying to hold on to a burnt-out light bulb and talk to spirits from Atlantis. Something else has come up many times, and I've brought it up, about the horizontal manifestations of the Word, and about there apparently being things in life that you can find that sound just like the Word. And many of you have wanted to, I've been able, through the force of my overbearing personality, being able to stop most of you from doing it, but, you know, everyone has sometimes had some question. If you wanted to ask me what I think of Swami so-and-so, or have I ever heard of Dr. X, or have I ever read a book by Professor so-and-so, which is obviously that you had read or heard something, and it just seemed to have tickled you somewhere, and you want to hear me make some comment or now attack him. Let me just see if now some of you can hear a little bit more. I could say that there are people, there's some guru somewhere. I could say somebody specific, or you could hand me a book, or I could just tell you I know some ordinary people, passing off as teachers, that are very close to talking about what would be the real word. The only reason I bring this up, I'm apparently talking about somebody out there. But it's in you. It just sounds like we're talking about this. And I could say that they are almost talking about the word. But what has happened to such people is they have stopped. They put a period on what little they saw at one time, or whatever they saw. And they have become crystallized. But they have absolutely stopped. And now what they apparently try to teach, which is quite common throughout the history of man, what they're teaching now is, in a sense, what they imagine things would have been, what they would probably prove to have been had they continued. And that's why it gets dangerously close to saying like the word. Because they at one time did see something. And they got to the point and they put a period on it. And I could give you psychological descriptions which are meaningless. They just simply stopped. The woods are full of them. They're normally what is seen out in life. But what apparently is the controlling factor that attracts people is what I'm trying to hint to you now, but you should remember it, not just out there, is they got to a point of aha, and they saw something. They saw something extraordinary. Forget how much or exactly what. Just to the point that they saw that things, they got a glimpse that things are not as everyone imagines. And it's just like I always suspected, that it's not like everybody imagines. And they stop. Because it's almost impossible not to. And they begin teaching and writing. And it gets dangerously close. It gets captious. It has a certain sound to it because then they start imagining. But they got some basis for it of what it would have been had I continued. And that's what they begin to talk about. And it sounds dangerously close. But all they are is a dead end street. There's nowhere to go. I remind you one more time. That's true out there, but it's also true in here. Aha! Now I understand that. Boy, that was such fun. When's the last time you made an effort? It was been about a year, but damn, you remember what I did last year? That almost blew my head apart, what I saw. It is the nature of things, and you will find it's not as bad now as a matter of years. I can't allow it, and plus things have changed. But you new people are going to find out you're going to get a big glimpse of something. And it's just, let us say, the real addicting, where there's no longer any doubt that, you know, wherever I go, you'll follow me. Whatever is required, you'll do it. You simply know what it is. And then you can ask yourself, if I don't do it to you, it suddenly strikes you, it's been months since I did shit. I have almost become my own guru. That, boy, that was astounding. And I didn't notice it, but I almost let a period impose itself in there. That is an absolute dead-end street. It is all temporary. And what you see today is no good anymore. What I want you to do next week, as simply as you can, and from the examples I made up, I want you to try and consider, and even to see, that even though I've just told you these were temporary words, me calling it a primal force, that is not a bad term. I want you to try and see that there are two different things going on, and to try and keep it out of the hands of the ordinary yellow circuitry of imagining back to this is, I'm looking for my unconsciousness. That there is a world, and I correctly pointed in the right place, that there is a self, and it is dealing in dreams that are based upon acquisitions. It is based upon what has been acquired in life. I'm not talking about cars and houses. I'm talking about that which seems to be your personality. And there is something that is much more basic than that, that is continually flowing. And why does a dog turn around three times, and what am I about to say next? And why is everyone who stops on the street and asks about the president being shot says it's horrible? And if they were interviewing people in the streets of Libya or Iran and asking what you think about the president of the United States being shot, what would they say? Hip, hip, hooray! Serves the bastard right. Why does a dog turn around three times before he sits down? And all of humanity believes that they are looking for some way to understand themselves, to better themselves. And I'll try it one more time on you. They are looking in absolutely the wrong place. And it's not only that, if what they're looking for was in that place, they have misnamed it. They have turned it upside down. That they're not just fighting at windmills, they're jousting at the wind itself. That is, I'm going to Birmingham and go fishing. I'm going to Birmingham and enjoy the Florida sun. I'm going back here in my personal past and unravel this unseemly situation to help do a way to uproot these perverse and disturbing daydreams. Anything that can be fueled is never disturbing. Anything that gets truly fueled and motivated that you have ever done, you did not suffer over. Of course, that is almost impossible out in life. Those things arranged for you almost always suffer a little bit, if it's no more than through the one that many of you can latch on to is, hey, I almost enjoyed that. Boy, I'm going to pay for it. That which you can learn to fuel yourself will transcend all that. That kind of fear can be flowing through and it's absolutely irrelevant. And that when it's good, it's fun. I am so shy. I don't know what I would do if he came up with worse task to go out and really do something more humiliating than he's come up with now, out in public. Which, please notice, you know, I've never had anybody do anything really humiliating. It wasn't that. Which is things, well, I've never done that. But to find that you can transcend it all, and I find that I have always been fearful to do so-and-so, and just go in and do it. If your aim is to awaken, what happens is that oftentimes, apparently just instantaneous, well, I'm just over it. It's nothing. I just had no idea I could do it. I couldn't believe I would do it. I thought I would faint before I walked up here and did that thing, before I said it, or before I did my little dance there at the jukebox, or before I turned around and tried to pick up a 300-pound red-headed woman. Whatever it was, I thought surely I would die, that I could not do it. The question is, I'm trying to get you to consider, what told you that you couldn't do it? Was it part of your nature? Is it going against the absolute primal flow of the kind of energies that pass through me ordinarily? Or is it something else? I haven't asked you the rhetorical question in a long time to end up something like that and say, ah, you better not do that. Who wants to give up suffering? Now you better not do that. Good grief. How about all the dreams that someday I'll work up the nerve? Someday I'll accidentally do it. Someday somebody will give me permission to do it. Someday everything will be different and I can do it. Who wants to lose that? Not just that, but the suffering over it. Ooh, what if somebody knew? Or to dream about doing it and suddenly the mayor and the vice squad come in and say, wait a minute, I recognize that man. And the press rushes up and everybody takes your picture. God damn. Isn't that fun to imagine? Well, isn't that ordinary to imagine? The caffeine task, you've got to put it all before you consider anything else. One more week with nothing. With none whatsoever. And the computer class, the reason I haven't started it was that I'm still pondering tearing this place up and I start something publicly here immediately. And I still haven't made such a decision. But since I will one way or the other shortly, it will interfere, if we do, with the computer class, is why it hasn't started. But it's the computer teachers are ready to go. so one way or the other we'll get it going, but not this week. And everyone remember Meyer and his mother, his grandmother died. And I didn't hear anything recently, but last I heard, Fran's mother was still sick. And if anybody'd like to look forward to it, the holiday that we missed, I told you that we had two a year. The spring one is coming up, is March the 26th, since you missed the fall one. So if everyone'd like to plan, but what if? What if I ruin it all, and what if I work fast enough and trick you into some way between now and March the 26th of letting it be cosmic Mardi Gras, and everything goes, and you can be mad and just do everything and get drunk and take drugs. And what if between now and March the 26th, plus you can't think what to do when we get to the 26th. How would that be for a dirty trick? But it's your duty twice a year to try and do every perverted and sleepy thing you can. What if you get to the 26th and you got all of it to do and you sit there and you can't think of a damn thing to do? God, how boring. I do want you to try and to see without you thinking that there's more to it than I have described tonight, because we're getting right at the heart of way beyond the occult dreams, but to lead you to the edge to find out how astounding it is. But what am I about to say next? And why does the dog turn around? To try and see that there is a whatever word that seems most appropriate for you for the week or to begin with, a dialogue, a confrontation, a struggle, that there are two voices going on. They don't necessarily speak in the same volume. They don't speak with the same kind of voice. But there are two forces operating. They have always been operating. And you have always, all of humanity has it misnamed. It's not demons in you, which we'll assume that all of you are over that. But it's also not an acquired unconsciousness. It is not forgotten, suppressed memories. That is not the problem. There is a something to you that cannot be altered. Then there is a something that is acquired, and it sets up a continuing friction. It sets up a continuing dialogue and confrontation. It is a part of the two forces in action, the first two. And if any of you get a glimpse of this week, you're going to know that all this had nothing to do with it. And in fact, in your spare time, some of you may then be getting disturbed that you're not going to have sufficient fun on March the 26th. Remember everybody in New York and those still on the coast. I continue to hear from some of them on the coast, don't know what they're going to do, and I don't really encourage them. I don't tell them they've got to come here anymore. I just leave it to what they're doing. But there's some that still consider themselves quite serious. The questions and observations get better, and when they get right, all I have to do is every week, we just spend an hour or so, and I'll just, when I've got that many, when you get to that point, and I'll just read them and wave them, and that'll be it. Once you realize that they're all coming from you, individually. Let me try one more hint. All religions and all pseudo forms of work always have some idea somewhere of forgiveness. But as always, now I should be able to piece it together, the first part to yourself, ordinary people always look externally. For God to forgive me, and even those who consider themselves some form of New Agers, that still the internal cosmic forces come through me and forgiveness flows into me now that I've seen the light and started eating rose petals. There is a reality to forgiveness, but it's not based upon some sort of gift. It is based upon a kind of supernatural knowledge. It is based upon being conscious above the level where all this is taking place that cries out for forgiveness. Because once it is seen that there is nothing to be forgiven for. But what I'm trying to get you to see more immediately is there is a reality behind "Thou be forgiven," but not from some voice behind a bush or a rock or coming out of the heavens, and not from me telling you, there, be forgiven. There is internally a reality to "Thou be forgiven." But what? You can't forgive this being what it is. You can't forgive that because it's not anything. The forgiveness is aha. The forgiveness is awakening. The forgiveness is seeing. But can you just get a glimpse that there is no such thing as forgiveness? Nobody can go, except for the few people that's playing those kind of parts in life. You can't have a priest or a guru truly say, "Thou be forgiven, God ordained me to forgive you." Nobody can be a Christian or a Jew or whatever they're claiming to be. Nobody can do it, but he has sent me here. He gave me the power to tell you that he knows that you want to do it and you can't, and so that's okay. Next. That is not forgiveness. If that was true forgiveness, assuming all of you grew up in some sort of religion more or less, nobody would be here. You'd have gone to the priest, the rabbi, or you'd have found some holy man before me. He'd say, there, have you read my books? Yes. And you're eating rose petals? Yes. You're contributing your money? Yes. Be forgiven. Next. And you went, wow, that'd been the end of it. As they were calling back in the 60s, you'd be blissed out, right? You wouldn't be here. There's no such thing as forgiveness. It's not available to an ordinary person. And I'm trying to give you a hint. That can't be forgiven. That can't be forgiven because it doesn't exist. And yet I'm telling you there is a reality to forgiveness. As always, it's in seeing that. You can. Some of you will be close to doing a small flip-o. Inside of you. And now for this week, don't start looking outside on the basis of trying to see the three forces at work last week. It's internally. And don't try to put words and don't try to grab it and hold it and examine it. It's just start trying to get a glimpse that there continue. There always has been. And it's going on now. And I've named them for you. You got to see it for yourself, though. And one of them seems to speak very loudly. One of them seems to be you. But it always has had resistance. If not, why the hell didn't you ever go there and do that thing? And why do you continue to dream about it? And it's not through a damn thing that's ever been done to you. It's through the same thing that makes a dog turn around three times before he sits down. And nobody knows why he does that on this planet right now, except almost two people. And I are one of them. But nobody else knows why. And the dog does not know why, because the dog is the dog. And the person asking why does not know why, because he is no longer the dog. But they're both there. One of them you have been listening to, and the other one you thought was some hidden dark voice that nobody could touch. The hidden dark voice, consider, there is first and second force in action. And it always has been, and it's not an unconscious aspect of man's mentation. It is right in there. And all of your life, you and everyone else, there's something calling out, hey, let's go. And there's something else that seems to be locked into a red pickup truck and the steering wheel, the whole mechanism welded into place, and it will not move. And there seems to sit someone there in the cab, all locked up, maybe dressed up in a tuxedo or with a beard looking like a holy man or looking sad, looking happy, and screaming out where we're going. Instructions, waving maps inside. And they're absolutely welded into it. They were born into that truck and they will die inside of that truck. And they're shouting out to other people, hey, let's go here, follow me, and where are you going? How did you decide to go there? Are you really going there? Why did you decide to do that? Really? Well, I think I will, too. And the truck keeps going. What's really funny is, of course, it's funnier than any of you know. And that's no attack on any of you. Those who think it's the funniest. I've already found out that it even gets funnier and funnier. They just thought that it was couldn't be any funnier. It's so funny that once I almost laughed.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.